The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
When the days were completed for their purification according to the law of Moses, Mary and Joseph took Jesus up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, just as it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that opens the womb shall be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer the sacrifice of a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons, in accordance with the dictate in the law of the Lord. Now, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. This man was righteous and devout, awaiting the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he should not see death before he had seen the Christ of the Lord. He came in the Spirit into the temple, and when the parents brought in the child Jesus to perform the custom of the law in regard to him, he took him into his arms and blessed God, saying, "Now, Master, you may let your servant go in peace according to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all the peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and glory for your people Israel." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
February 2nd is the feast of Jesus' presentation, and since that date rotates around the various calendar days of the week, it's only occasionally that it falls on a Sunday, as it does tomorrow. So tonight is the vigil of that feast. And I had to go back into the first books of the Old Testament to refresh my memory as to what was behind this. And if I may, I want to read also what occurred before this presentation of the child Jesus by Mary and Joseph in the Jerusalem temple. So, St. Luke's Gospel says in chapter 2, when 8 days were completed for his circumcision, he was named Jesus, the name given him by the angel before he was conceived in the womb. Okay, so he is circumcised on the 8th day, he is named on the 8th day, and then immediately after that, St. Luke wrote, when the days were completed for their purification, according to the law of Moses, they took him up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, just as it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that opens the womb shall be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer the sacrifice of a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons in accord with the dictate of the law of the Lord. Okay, so, well, you can go back to the Old Testament into the law of the Lord, and you can look these things up. But you have to go back to Genesis prior to the Mosaic Law to learn about the origin of circumcision. So, for an ancient Jewish male, there were two rites of initiation into their religion. And this is important for us because, of course, the whole of the Israelite religion, that which we call Judaism, foreshadows our religion, Christianity. That which is foreshadowed in the Old Testament is fulfilled in the New. I'm going to bring that to the fore here in just a moment. Okay, so if you're an ancient Jewish male, And this only applies to the men and the boys, not to the women and to the girls. When you were, and this is every male, when you are 8 days old, you are circumcised. If you join the religion later, you are circumcised then. The origin of this is found in Genesis chapter 17, super, super early on here in the Bible. And God is revealing to Abraham the covenant that he is making with him. And he says, on your part, you and your descendants after you must keep my covenant throughout the ages. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you that you must keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. Circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and that shall be the mark of the covenant between you and me. Throughout the ages, every male among you, when he is 8 days old, shall be circumcised, including houseborn slaves and those acquired with money from any foreigner who is not of your blood. Yes, both the houseborn slaves and those acquired with money must be circumcised. Thus, my covenant shall be in your flesh as an everlasting pact. If a male is uncircumcised, that is, if the flesh of his foreskin has not been cut away, such a one shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. Okay, I figured that is the theologically important passage. So, what is the covenant that God made with Abraham? It is the one that was really ignored by the Jews at the time of Christ. Look up at the sky, count the stars if you can, even so shall your descendants be. Look at the sand on the seashore, so shall your descendants be. Through you shall all peoples of the world be blessed. I will make your descendants numerous. Now remember, Abraham and Sarah, his wife, were not able to conceive. God, through a miracle, allowed them to conceive Isaac. And so God makes a promise to Abraham that seems to be impossible, yet he fulfills it. And what is the point? It is that blessing is going to come not only to this man and his descendants, but through them to all people of the world. There's going to be something universal happening. We see that fulfilled in Christianity, in the spreading of the gospel. Okay, so it is noteworthy, and I'd never thought about this before, that as the sign of this covenant, God decided to have permanently marked the generative organ of the males. Think about that, but don't think about it too much. Okay, it's almost like a tattoo, you know, or a brand. That God is saying, I am going to have you branded that you are part of this covenant. This is a generative covenant, a generous covenant. Therefore, the males in this covenant are going to have irrevocably marked on their generative organ the fact that they are part of this covenant. On the other hand, if they are not or refuse to be initiated in this way, then they are cut off from this covenant. Okay, so it's not theologically neutral. Okay, it is obligatory. So Jesus' parents have him circumcised on the eighth day in fulfillment of this, and he is named on that day. And there's a parallel in Christianity with our religious initiation, which is baptism. It is the tradition of the church that at the baptism of the child, the name of the child is revealed to the community. And so in the ritual of baptism, and gratefully we have a baptism at this Mass tonight, It says, what name do you give to your child? And then in parentheses, or have you given? Recognizing the fact that in many societies such as our own, the state requires the parents to let them know what the name of the child is. You can't just go home and, you know, call them later, okay? Because there's documents and legal things that have to be done. However, let's say we were to go back some hundreds of years, people gather for the baptism, what's the boy's name? And then at the baptism, it's like Thomas, and everybody goes, oh, okay, Thomas. That's why we say, you know, what's your baptismal name? You'd be named at your baptism like Jewish males were named at their circumcisions. Okay, now, this is not the feast of the circumcision or naming of the Lord, but rather of his presentation. But these two initiatory things are closely linked. Okay, now, I want to go to Exodus 13 and read you this. When the Lord your God has brought you into the land of the Canaanites, which he swore to you and to your fathers he would give you, you shall dedicate to the Lord every son that opens the womb. And all the male firstlings of your animals shall belong to the Lord. So, this only applied to the son who was first, the firstborn son. That one was dedicated to God in a special way through this ritual. And a sacrifice had to be made on his behalf. Similarly, let me just read you now. If your son should ask you later on, what does this mean? You shall tell him, with a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt, that place of slavery. When Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed every firstborn in the land of Egypt, every firstborn of man and of beast. That is why I sacrifice to the Lord everything of the male sex that opens the womb, and why I redeem every firstborn of my sons. Let this then be as a sign on your hand and as a pendant on your forehead. With a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt. Okay, so the purpose now of the presentation we see is to remind the people of another covenant. That is the one through Moses and the drawing out of the people from slavery in Egypt. The circumcision is about Abraham and the covenant with him. Okay, and now we're talking about the freedom from slavery. Again, this is a foreshadowing of our Christian faith. And specifically, we can think of baptism, that just as the ancient Hebrews were drawn through the water of the Red Sea, leaving slavery on one side and entering freedom on the other, so too, in the waters of baptism, a Christian leaves slavery to sin and the bondage of not being in relationship with God behind, and is adopted by God, calling him Father and having all sins forgiven. Okay, now, going to go finally to Leviticus chapter 12. This concerns the mother. The Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites, when a woman is conceived and gives birth to a boy, she shall be unclean for 7 days. On the eighth day, the flesh of the boy's foreskins shall be circumcised, and then she shall spend 33 days more in becoming purified of her blood. When the days for her purification for a son are fulfilled, she shall bring to the priest at the entrance of the meeting tent, which had been supplanted by the temple at the time of Christ, a yearling lamb for a holocaust, and a pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering. The priest shall offer them up before the Lord to make atonement for her, and thus she will be clean again after her flow of blood. If, however, she cannot afford a lamb, she may take 2 turtle doves or 2 pigeons, the one for a holocaust and the other for a sin offering. So the fact that St. Luke records that Joseph and Mary did not offer a lamb indicates that they were too poor at this point to afford one. That's pretty poor, you know, quite frankly. So they did the offering for a poor person, these little birds. All right. So as I said, The Old Testament prefigures the New. The New Testament fulfills the Old. So, there were religious initiatory rites that were prescribed by God through divine revelation for the people, and the Holy Family was faithful to them. And then the apostles determined that these no longer applied in the New Covenant era. Did men need to be circumcised to become Christians? Because, quite frankly, virtually no non-Jewish ancient men were circumcised. That was a real liability for the church, because this was a foreign thing to the pagan Greco-Roman world that the church was trying to spread the gospel in. And the apostles determined, no, baptism is our ritual of initiation, not circumcision. And so you don't need to be circumcised. If you are, fine. It doesn't mean anything spiritually any longer. Also, the ritual of going to Jerusalem to make these ritual sacrifices, it's gone. Our initiation is baptism, and that's the only initiation that we have. So, in the Catechism, there are just a few little paragraphs that apply to this, and specifically, as regards the baptism of children. You know, we talk about baptism as regards adults, as regards adolescents, but let's just focus in, since Jesus is here an infant being initiated into Judaism, talk about infants being initiated into Christianity through baptism. Paragraph 1250 says, "Born with a fallen human nature and tainted by original sin." What does original sin mean? Does it mean that a little baby has committed sin, or what we call actual sin, that it's chosen against God? No. Period. No. Sin means that one is not in relationship with God, and that can come about either through an act of the will, actual sin, but it can also come about from the simple fact that after the fall of Adam and Eve, no human being is born into a natural state of relationship with God. When you're born, you're not yet in relationship with God. Did I say that God doesn't love you? No. But you are not yet in a state of relationship with God. You have to be taught about God, who God is. You have to be formed in the ways of God. Learn to love God. You don't just poof come into the world naturally knowing God and loving God. Okay. Hence the role of parents, so important in the lives of young children. So when we say original sin, the root word is origin. From your origin, you are not in a state of relationship with God. And here is a little bit of unpopular theology, but it's true. When a baby is born, until it is baptized, it is not a child of God. It is a creature of God, created in God's image and beloved by God. But properly speaking, not God's child. Baptism is our spiritual adoption ceremony. Before baptism, you may not call God your father. You may call God your creator, but not your father. That's relational. After you've been baptized, you can say, God is my father, the church is my mother. It's very, very important. So we speak loosely about, you know, all people being children of God. No, Christians who have been baptized are children of God. All people are creatures of God with an inherent dignity. Only those who have been baptized are children of God. Children also have need of the new birth and baptism to be freed from the power of darkness and brought into the realm of the freedom of the children of God to which all men are called. The sheer gratuitousness of the grace of salvation is particularly manifest in infant baptism. Think here of Jesus being initiated into his religion. the church and the parents would deny a child the priceless grace of becoming a child of God were they not to confer baptism shortly after birth. Let me read that again. The church and the parents would deny a child the priceless grace of becoming a child of God were they not to confer baptism shortly after birth. Christian parents have the obligation to present their children through the church for holy baptism as soon as possible. Continuing on, Christian parents will recognize that this practice also accords with their role as nurturers of the life that God has entrusted to them. Finally, the practice of infant baptism is an immemorial tradition of the church. There is explicit testimony to this practice from the second century on, and it is quite possible that from the beginning of the apostolic preaching, when whole households received baptism, infants may also have been baptized. That is a reference to various passages from the books of Acts of the Apostles, in which it says that a whole household is baptized. So scripturally, I want you to remember this. Nowhere is the baptism of infants or little children ever forbidden in the Bible. Ever forbidden. And then there are these occasions in which there is at least the possibility, if not even the likelihood, that if a whole household is baptized, there's some child there that is very young that was baptized. So the Bible at least allows the possibility for it, never is against it. However, someone might object and say, if Christian parents have their child, such as little baby, baptized, and this is well before that child can know what it is being initiated into, what the parents are doing is they are taking away the possibility of that person one day when they are old enough and able of making that choice for God, him or herself, of exercising their will to be baptized, saying, I want to be baptized, because you can only be baptized once. There's no repeating it. So in my case, my parents had me baptized as an infant. I have no memory of it. I never chose it for myself. I therefore later in life wasn't able to say, I want to be baptized. And so some will object and say, this tradition of the church is wrong. But also, you have undoubtedly heard, I just mentioned here a little bit of interesting historical trivia. You're familiar with the sect of Protestantism called Baptist. Okay. The reason that they are called Baptist is because they have their origin in the heresy of precisely that. Their little agenda issue going back hundreds of years was, we should not baptize very young people. We should wait and let people decide to be baptized on their own. And that's why they are known as Baptists. So if you are raised a Baptist, you almost certainly will have to choose to be baptized yourself when you are an older child. You will not be baptized as an infant. Okay. But there's also something else that is said in our modern day, and it is this. I'm not going to have my child baptized or children baptized because I want them to be able to make the decision for themselves. This would be the parent speaking. This was the case, for example, of my very good friend in high school, whom I ended up sponsoring for baptism. And I was, you know, a teenager and naive, and I was just scandalized that his Catholic father and his Lutheran mother had never had him baptized or imparted the Christian religion to him at all. He knew nothing about God. I was stunned. I thought everybody knew about God. He didn't know anything. And he went to our Catholic high school, and he was exposed to it, and it was beautiful and loving, and he wanted to become a Catholic. And we had to start at like ground zero. And I thought to myself, what is going on here? And I got that response from his parents. We don't want to impose, you know, Christianity upon him. So I was talking with Father Oliver at the high school about this, kind of working this through. Like, I can't believe that they never taught him anything about God, was what I said to Father. And Father responded, oh, they did teach him about God. They taught him that God is not important. I was like, ooh, that's chilling. But he was right. You can do it one way or the other. You can teach your child that God is important, and the child can later reject that. Or, passively, you can teach the child that God is not important, and then maybe the child later will learn that God is. But you have to do one or the other. And this sort of answers the earlier objection. There can be no violation of a person's will by the parents in choosing to have the child baptized. Okay? Because when the will finally matures, that will can always be exercised against God. You cannot bind the will of your children through baptism. Parents, wouldn't you like to? But you can't. You can, and plenty of parents have their children initiated into God through the ritual of baptism, and later the older child or the adult says, I utterly reject this. There is no binding of freedom. Okay, what about that other issue? Well, okay, but if you do initiate your child into Christianity through baptism, are you not keeping them from ever being able to choose it for themselves? And let's just be honest, the answer is yes, of course. Of course you're keeping them from being. You can't. But here we have to weigh two goods. And in brief, this is Catholic theology of infant baptism in a nutshell. We acknowledge the goodness of a person saying, I want to be baptized. I'm old enough to know what it is and to say, I want it. I exercise my will. That is a very, very good thing. That's good. But there's another good in baptism, and that is the graces that are given by God to the person, young or old, through baptism. In the first case, we have what the person brings. All you can bring is your sin and your will. Saying, I'm sinful and I want to be baptized. That's all you can bring. What does God bring? Spiritual adoption. Forgiveness of all actual sin. Restoration of communion with Him through the, as we say, forgiveness of original sin. Sanctifying grace. All of these good things, such that when a baby is baptized, if that baby dies, it is going straight to heaven, guaranteed. We cannot say that about children that are not baptized that tragically die. We don't know what happens to them. We don't say they definitely go to hell, but God hasn't revealed what happens to their souls, and so we just have to commend them to the mercy of God. But once a child's been baptized, it will go straight to heaven if tragically it dies. Okay? We can see there the goodness. Because otherwise, if the contrary were true, wouldn't you have to go back to that scene in the temple and go, excuse me, Joseph, Mary, you're violating Jesus' rights. This is wrong. This is perverse. God, what were you thinking in mandating initiation into a religion only 8 days after birth? God, you're wrong. It's ridiculous. And if it would be ridiculous back then, I propose it would be ridiculous to say to Catholic parents, you shouldn't have your child baptized. Of course you should. With a baby, you can't have both the exercise of the child's will and all the graces. You have to choose. And the Catholic theology is, if we have to choose, we are going to prioritize what God brings, not what the human brings. So, parents, be faithful. Encourage others to fidelity. Present your young children for holy baptism at the earliest possibility. And don't think for a minute that you're in any way doing anything but that which pleases the Lord. And you can look to the example of Mary and Joseph if you have any questions about that.